Welcome, everyone, to episode 382 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a surprising amount of news to discuss today. On Wednesday night, the Washington Wizards and Houston Rockets did the most objectively hilarious trade we've seen in years, so we will discuss that. And there's also some Lakers extension news to discuss, so we'll get into all of that. Before we do, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are also doing this episode live on Locker Room, so if you are an iOS device, check out the Locker Room app. You can come hang out live, ask us questions, even come on stage and speak with us live. So download the Locker Room app on iOS. They are also working on an Android version as well. Joining me today, as always, is a surprisingly grumpy Morten Jensen. How's it going, buddy?
Well, no, not grumpy per se. I am tired. I am very, very satisfied. I started a new gig. And it's been working some good hours, and it's just you're getting acclimated to a new place, so it's always a little bit emotionally draining. And in lieu of that, Brian, I actually have a plea, because part of my research, I'm working for a company called VO Technologies. They are developing a sports camera. They have developed a sports camera used primarily for football. You would know that as soccer. That is two 4K lenses, you know, shoved in one box, and it records the entire field at once, you know, at the same time, and then automatically pans forwards and backwards and automatically locks like data points such as goals and whatnot. And we're trying to expand that into basketball. So I have been tasked with finding, you know, high school head coaches, or not even head coaches, just high school coaches and college coaches. So if you out there are listening to this podcast, you live in North America, and you coach basketball, men, women, whatever, you know, hit me up on Twitter. My DMs are open. It's at MSJNBA. I could really use some insights into what you would need in terms of how to improve such a camera for basketball. Yes. So thank you for that.
Yes, please do that. And also, I would like to apologize to Mort, because I made him wait 2 hours today. I was trying to listen to Ben Simmons' media availability, and Sixers PR did the...
That I'm grumpy about.
Well, they emailed us at 1:36 saying he is just finishing his workout, he'll be on shortly, and then they made us wait on Zoom for 2 hours, only to say he's not speaking until tomorrow, so...
Yeah, I'm removing Ben Simmons for every All-NBA team this year just because of this.
I agree. So, Mort, let's get right into it. Late Wednesday night, the trade, we had heard rumblings of this going into the draft. I think Sham Sharania of The Athletic was the one to report it, that the Rockets and Wizards has discussed a Westbrook for Wall deal. It finally happened last night. The Wizards are also sending a lottery-protected 2023 first-round pick to the Rockets. The protections are full lottery in 2023, 1 through 12 in 2024, 1 through 10 in 2025, 1 through 8 in 2026. If it hasn't conveyed by then, it turns into two second-round picks, 2026 and 2027. So, Mort, we'll discuss it from both sides, but let's start with the Rockets, because... Yes, I mean, given the price they paid last offseason to get Russell Westbrook, they flipped Chris Paul, two first-round picks and two first-round pick swaps for Westbrook, and then move him a year later for a guy who hasn't played basketball in 2 years and a pretty heavily protected first-round pick. What do you think?
Which could become 2 seconds.
Right, yeah. So what do you think of this deal from the Rockets' perspective?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you go back to 2019, this was all worth it to get Russell Westbrook to play 57 games in a Rockets uniform, right? Totally worth it. That was at the time, I knew it would be such a great trade. You know that.
Right.
We can go back in the logs. I obviously commended this trade a lot. No. This was always dumb. This was always such a weird move. And I am a Daryl Morey believer. So I still don't quite comprehend what happened in 2019, whether it was him basically just saying, screw it, like, we're just going to give up everything. I'm not going to be here for long anyway. Or if he genuinely thought this would be a good price point for Russell Westbrook. If he did, you know, Daryl, sorry, I'm dodging you a few points for that one. But if you did it just to screw over the Rockets overall because of Tillman Fertitta, thumbs up, man. Well done, because that worked.
I think Daryl gets the same benefit of the doubt from Rockets fans that Sixers give Sam Hinkie, or Sixers fans give Sam Hinkie with the Okafor pick in 2015, where it was just like such an out-of-character move that you almost assume there had to be ulterior motives. And, you know, from the Rockets perspective, at least from the Rockets, the few Rockets people I follow on Twitter, they're basically under the assumption that, you know, this was a James Harden-driven move. He said, you know, there was well-documented drama between Harden and Chris Paul. It was basically like, you have to choose one or the other. They're obviously going to choose James Harden. So, you know, he kind of pulled some strings behind the scenes, or then, you know, Fertitta might have as well. So I'm guessing it was not like Daryl Morey thought this was a good idea and a good value proposition, more than we just have to keep James Harden happy, and if this is what it's going to do, so be it. But yeah, objectively, it's hilarious that he did that trade and then left a year later, and now they're out, you know, three or two first-round picks, two pick swaps, and get this mediocre pick back. It's like enormous loss in terms of value for the Rockets. But I mean, Kevin Durant has spoken. He played with John Wall this offseason. He says John Wall looks good. Do you have hope that John Wall, you know, obviously coming off of an Achilles injury, we know the history of NBA players coming off of that injury. I don't think it's fair to assume he's going to be, you know, the 23-10 all-star that he was prior to it, but
23-11 almost.
Oh, there actually. You go. Yeah. So do you think there's any chance that he gets to like 80% of this? Or, I mean, what are your expectations for John Wall this season?
See, that's such a crap question, because that just puts me up to fail, because I like John Wall. I want to root for him. I don't want to be realistic about this. I want the best for John Wall. I want him to come back and be, you know, the 23-point, 11-assist, 5-rebounds type of guy. I want him to become that. But I have this thing, and I sure most do, that's called logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, the logic just doesn't add up to him becoming that same player when you look at it in terms of his playing style. Like, he was never a fundamentally sound player, right? A lot of this was reliant upon athleticism. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, so here's the thing. Incredibly smart passer, though. Like, doesn't matter if it was in a half-court setting or a full-court setting. So that thing, you know, the passing element, I think, is still there. But when you just tear up your Achilles, you know, defensively, you're going to be a train wreck. You just are. You're not going to have the same versatility, the lateral movement. There are so many things that are going to limit you moving forward. And defense was one of his biggest selling points. If that has been taken away from him, and he's not a great shooter, if, you know, let's be honest here, then it becomes a problem, right? Then he basically has to become this straight line driving point guard who can then dish off, which, yeah, I still think there's something to that. But an all-star level player, I just doubt it. I don't think it's in the cards. I desperately hope I'm wrong. Desperately so. I want to eat my words so bad. I want John Wall to come on this podcast and just go, you MF-er. Like, I'd be okay with that. I would love it. I would just go, yes, John. Hammer me. Just slaughter me. It's fine. Because he was genuinely one of the most entertaining players in the NBA. But no, I think the ship has sailed on him as a star.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for him, I mean, what would a good season be? That he plays 60 to 70% of his games and is, you know, not necessarily a major negative defensively because of the Achilles tear. And he, in the meantime, has improved his shooting a little bit. So if he spots up, he's a reliant shooter, or, you know, someone you can rely upon. I think that might be my top expectation, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think his improvement as a shooter in this 2-year period that he hasn't played competitive basketball is really going to dictate the second half of his career, because, you know, over the first 9 years, he shot 32.4% from three on 2.9 attempts per game. That's, you know, he could get by with that because he was so athletic and such a good slasher, but if the Achilles has robbed him of some of that ability, he's going to have to have improved as a spot up shooter, as a, you know, I could see him still being the primary ball handler, but our team's going to give him the Ben Simmons treatment, the Markelle Fultz treatment, the Giannis treatment, where it's like, okay, we'll just sag off of you. We're going to collapse the paint and dare you to shoot until you can prove that you can actually hit it. I mean, you know, playing with James Harden, they can't necessarily do that because you're going to have someone guarding James Harden too. So I'm intrigued to see how this fit works. But I'm also, the thing that I'm most nervous about for Wall and then also DeMarcus Cousins, who the Rockets took a 1-year flyer on, you know, he's had a similar injury history, an Achilles, torn quad, and then the ACL last year. The training camp is condensed this year. Right now, I believe they're only doing individual workouts. I think the full team workouts can't even start until Sunday. And then the season starts like 2 weeks later. So, you know, I think there's going to be less of a ramp up period than usual, even for guys who are well conditioned and that like have been in basketball shape already. It makes me nervous for anyone coming off of a major injury like Wall, like Boogie. You know, I mean, honestly, I think the best case scenario for Wall, I don't even care what his numbers look like. The best case scenario is just stay healthy. Because there's a, you know, there's a chance that he suffers another major injury, and this contract, which is already one of the worst in the NBA, it becomes even worse.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. That would be a win in of itself, as long as he's healthy and can produce at a certain level. The thing that I'm sitting here wondering about, I'm thinking a little bit ahead, admittedly, but you know. What point guard do you think he'll get flipped for next summer when James Harden has, you know, told management he doesn't want to play with John Wall?
Right. No, I think it's going to have to be, you just got to cycle through the worst contracts in the league, and we're like basically out of really bad point guard contracts, unless Kemba's knees are totally shot, which is...
Oh, yeah, Kemba. Yeah. There we go.
But otherwise, like, maybe you just move on to the Blake Griffins and Kevin Loves of the world.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. And then after, you know, after 1 year of Love, you move on to Blake Griffin. Oh no, he's gonna be a free agent at that point. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't
you gotta do Blake first, then Love.
Yeah,
that's the order.
Well, I'm definitely very interested in the whole soap opera thing of who James Harden doesn't want to play with next, and I am just begging for him to go to Brooklyn, because him and Kyrie is such a train wreck waiting to happen, and it's going to be glorious.
Well, so that's my next question. You know, Woj was on Get Up this morning, the ESPN show, and apparently said that Harden preferred Wall to Westbrook, which just absolutely blew my mind. But, you know, he was obviously, Harden has been in some trade rumors this offseason, particularly with Brooklyn. How do you see this trade affecting his future in Houston?
It shouldn't. This trade was so bad. I mean, I don't think this changes anything. Like, Houston is on the way down regardless. So I don't think this changes his perception of things. He wanted Westbrook out, which is just, this is why I'm kidding around, because it seems like every single offseason there's a guy he wants out of there because he just, I don't know, can't handle it. Like, at some point, I just think you've got to stay away from James Harden if you're a team. Like, if he has a problem with virtually everyone, then suddenly you have to realize the problem isn't with everyone else, it's with you.
Right. It's the old saying, like, and if you can't tell who the asshole in the room is, you are probably the asshole. That is James Harden right now.
Exactly. So, and I think teams understand this a little bit better now. Like, with Woj coming out and saying that, I have a feeling that teams are, like, a little bit more hesitant. I wouldn't be surprised if teams were like, he what now?
Yeah.
And another one?
Well, because it's now...
Just DJ Khaled and another one.
Right. I mean, it's been Dwight, Chris Paul, and now Russ. Russ, who he played with in OKC and was like very happy to welcome into the fold. last year. So I think the question is, does he just not want to play with another really high usage player? Or
in which case the Brooklyn Nets makes perfect sense, right?
Right. I mean, it's like it comes to a question of like, how do you build sustainably around James Harden? Or or is he just going to be this guy who puts up like historic monster numbers and is never going to win anything because he isn't willing to make the sacrifice of, I'm not going to have the ball in my hand for 20 seconds every possession?
Yeah. He is this generation's Charles Barkley.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a fascinating question. And the one thing I'm excited about, like, you know, in the best case scenario, we get a healthy John Wall, a healthy DeMarcus Cousins, and James Harden. Like, on paper, that's a really good, talented team. And Christian Wood's still in there, too. PJ Tucker. Like, Houston, on paper, if everything breaks absolutely right, could surprise us all this year. But I just think the downside is so high and so much more likely with Wall and Cousins that I will be holding my breath every Rockets game. Just, like, please make it through healthy.
If the Rockets have a good season and we're all shocked and surprised by them afterwards, I'll begin buying lottery tickets. That's where I'm at.
That's fair. Let the record reflect. I at least floated this as a possibility before.
Yeah, so you can look really smart afterwards on the off chance that you're right.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Gotta play both sides every time.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's go to the Wizards now, Mort, who, you know, gave up Wall, gave up this protected pick for Westbrook. What do you think of the trade from their perspective?
Well, you know, I always love when teams trade for Russell Westbrook. I
mean, right.
That's obviously an instant upgrade. Now, in this case, it actually is an upgrade simply because, he's playing and he isn't, he doesn't have an Achilles tear in this sense. You know, there isn't that big question mark over him. There is a baseline of what you can expect from him. And that's a positive. What I am concerned about is the fact that last season he took 22.5 shots per game. I don't think he should take that many shots next to a Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is essentially a lesser James Harden as it is. He's a 30-point scorer, someone who can initiate the offense. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a great fit. I don't want to see the ball get taken away from Beal. Now, if you find a way around it within the flow of the offense, and this allows Beal to become more of a shooter and move off the ball just a little bit more and be more efficient that way, but he gets the same shot amount, but in different methods, okay. That one I'll be intrigued to see. That could be actually interesting. But if Russ comes into Washington and just goes, all right, it's the Russ show, like, I'm just going to gun everything. I want to go back to the triple doubles. Bradley Beal, yeah, whoever. I got this. Then it's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wrote a thing from Washington's perspective for Forbes this morning where I said basically this is, like, their last stand with Bradley Beal. Like, this was the one guy they could have traded John Wall for. And I think from their perspective, I understand the risk, especially considering they really didn't, that protected pick in 2023 come back to bite them, but they protected it well enough that, worst case scenario, they give up a mid-lottery pick 6 years down the line. Like, it's, especially with Bradley Beal's clock ticking, like, he can become a free agent in 2022. He has repeatedly said he does not want to leave. He wants to retire a Wizard. He's been more loyal to them than he frankly should have been. And then I think that a lot of stars would be to their respective teams. Like, Paul George did not give the Pacers this amount of respect. Anthony Davis did not do this with the Pelicans either. Bradley Beal likes Washington and wants to stay there, but they couldn't gamble on John Wall, who, even when healthy and when an all-star, Wall and Beal, there is a lot of the same stuff you hear with Ben and Joel now, where it's like, well, they don't really like each other. They don't like playing well with each other. If Wall came back healthy and tried to be his old self, maybe those tensions flare up again. But if not, and he's, this is just who John Wall is at this point in his career, Bradley Beal, we saw what happens to a Wizards team without John Wall last year. Like, they could not go and bank on John Wall staying healthy because that's not a gamble you can make with Bradley Beal being able to become a free agent in 2 years. And like, when, if and when Giannis signs the Supermax, the vultures are going to start hovering over Washington immediately. We already saw, and there was like a Miami Herald report a week or two ago that said, you know, if Giannis signs the Supermax, Miami turns its full attention to Bradley Beal. So,
as they should.
Right. So, you know, is Russ the perfect fit next to Bradley Beal? No, definitely not. I don't think anyone would argue that. He is more of a sure thing. You can at least, you know, he did miss 15 games last year, but prior to that, he had played 73, 80, 81, and 80. So,
yeah, he hasn't missed 2 years of basketball, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly. You can at least, you know, knock on wood, count on him being on the floor and giving you, you know, he's still going to be extremely ball dominant, but his experience next to playing with James Harden will teach him how to, you know, he has experience playing next to another high usage dominant all-star guard, so that in theory could help him develop chemistry with Beal. And I think it was Fred Katz and David Aldridge, both of The Athletic, who made this point. Like, Russ is one of those guys who just gives a damn every single night. And, you know, that doesn't sound like a very high bar, but in the regular season, it is. Like, when you have, I would say the Wizards, but they're the Wizards. If you have the Knicks on the schedule or the Charlotte Hornets on the schedule, and you're like, ugh, okay, this should be a cakewalk. We can get through it 70%, still beat this team. And then, you know, it's the NBA, so you often can't do that. Like, even on bad teams, there are a lot of talented players. Russ isn't that type of player. He's going to go balls to the wall every single game, often to his detriment. But, right, you know, it's going to help change the culture in Washington, where they have Beal and really a bunch of young guys now. So he could be a positive influence on their locker room, even if some of his on-court tendencies are extremely frustrating.
That's right, because we definitely know Russell Westbrook to be a great locker room presence and a great leader who is great with everyone and the media and is just such a positive beam of sunshine. You're right.
Well, I mean, most of his teammates, like, find me many teammates of his. Kevin Durant and James Harden are the exceptions because they're fellow stars, so the potential conflict with Bradley Beal is fair, but like, Paul George swore by the guy, you know. Yeah. Steven Adams swore
well, that's
by the
Paul
guy.
George that's well, Paul George
Steven I, Adams I, like I, most of his OKC teammates seem to genuinely love him.
Yeah, but after having read the whole Clippers expose on The Athletic,
oh yeah,
what Paul George, you know, swears by, I don't really put too much stock into.
That's
let's just
fair.
Put it that way.
That's,
but no, I get what you're saying. Here's the thing, though. This, like you said, this is a young team. These are young players, and they need the room to develop as well. Mm-hmm. So even if they swear by the guy or they like the guy, you know, if he's going to take over possessions, that is going to sacrifice their development and their potential, then it's not worth it overall.
Yeah. It's a, like, look, I'm not saying this acquisition is not without risk for Washington. You can very easily see it backfiring. And I'm going to ask you the same question I did with Houston. Why? I mean, because really both teams are in the same position, right? Harden can become a free agent after 2022. Bradley Beal can become a free agent after 2022. They made this trade as like, let's, you know, we both of these, Harden or Russ and John Wall both want out. Harden wants out. Beal says he doesn't, but he probably does too. We have to try to convince Harden and Beal to stay. Let's flip our distressed assets and see if that can, you know, change right. anything.
Let's Spider-Man meme this trade. Yes.
right. So do you think this trade increases the Wizards' chances of keeping Bradley Beal beyond 2022?
No.
Yeah. I would agree. But why don't you think so?
Because ultimately, I don't think this moves the needle a whole lot. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. Russell Westbrook, in terms of just pure talent and nose to the ball, that, you know, we've had this conversation on this podcast for, well, since it started back in 2016. He is a fantastically talented player. He just cannot get out of his own way. And if there's something the Wizards don't need right now, it's a guy who can't get out of his own way. And here's the thing. Bradley Beal, despite him not being a great defender, and despite him taking a bunch of bad shots last year, That was out of necessity. He's actually a very, very, very intelligent basketball player who understands what a good shot is. Now, if he sees Russ jack up like 5 bad shots a game, and it ultimately hurts them in the win-loss column, what incentive does that give Bradley Beal to say, hey, guys, you know what? I want to stick around while his long-ass contract blocks up the books.
Right. Oh, it's a fair point. I mean, Westbrook is being reunited with head coach Scott Brooks, who coached him in OKC for, I believe, 7 years. And, you know, in that time, Westbrook developed into what he is now, a multi-time All-Star, MVP caliber player. But at the same time, Brooks was also unable to rein in some of Westbrook's bad tendencies. You know, the questionable shot selection, the inconsistent effort on defense, especially during the regular season. So I think that's going to be one of the big questions, is how do Westbrook and Beal coexist? How, you know, can Brooks hold Westbrook more accountable than he did during his time in OKC? If so, maybe that does make Beal want to stay longer. But I mean, I'm with you. Ultimately, okay, the Wizards are probably, like, now they can compete for a spot in the play-in tournament, but, like, what, you know, what's this team's long-term upside? Still probably a first-round knockout, right? Like, I don't see this team winning a playoff series this year.
You know what really should have happened this summer? Or I keep saying summer. This offseason. Because apparently since the Hornets decided, hey, let's cup check this up. They really should have just gone all out, right? And just because they're such an irrelevant franchise, generally speaking. Like, I had high hopes for them in the long term, but they completely messed that up by doing what they did with Gordon Hayward and stretching Batum and all that. Oh, and the 15% trade kicker that was also included in the contract, because why the hell not? Let's get weird. The Hornets of all teams, you know, they should have sacrificed, you know, young players, draft picks, whatever, and just gone after the big names who you can get. The guys who put up big numbers but are essentially just names. Like, sign Hassan Whiteside. Trade for Russell Westbrook. Go see what you can, if you can get Chris Paul in there or someone else. Like, someone. No, DeMar DeRozan, right. LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, just get the big-ass name, you know, big name of guys in there who no longer really can play in the NBA in 2020 and be relied upon for you know, significant stretches. Hey, hell, you know what? Add Gordon Hayward as well. You know, you find a way. You find a way. Just get those guys on the same team. Let them clock up the salary cap for the next 5 years. Just be big names and trot them out in Charlotte Hornets uniforms, because then you can just ignore them. Then it's one team that is just out there in the periphery of things, just doing their thing, like maybe winning, you know, 35, 36 games a year. Maybe sometimes making the playoffs, sometimes maybe not. They get a big stat, there's lots of drama, and everyone else can just say, you know what? That's the reality TV show. We're here, we're taking care of business in a more serious way. That I would like, instead of having all these, you know, players with no substance who are all flash spread out across the league, because, oh, I loathe it.
I mean, it sounded like the Hornets were in on Russ until they got LaMelo, and then that changed the equation. But that does beg the question, given what Westbrook ended up going for, you know, a guy on a similarly horrific contract plus one protected pick. Are you surprised the Knicks
and a guy who has and a guy who hasn't played in 2 years? This is very, very important to remember. Yes. So a worse contract, even though it's similar.
Right. So, like, I'm surprised the Knicks didn't get involved here. Are you?
I'm actually not, because the Knicks have played it smart. The Knicks might have had one of their best off seasons over the past decade by just playing it nice and slow. It's not, you know, world beating or anything, but compared to what they usually do, they've had a good off season. So, like, I applaud the Knicks for not getting involved. It actually seems like they are on the threshold of knowing what they're doing. It's amazing, and I think Knicks fans should should applaud that, and I think they deserve to have a break from the ridicule. So far, it looks good, but hell, what do I know? I was high on the Pistons and Hornets coming into the offseason, and they found a way to just say, hey, Mort, screw you.
And the Kings prior to that. So, yeah, we might be the kiss of death here in terms of when we see a rebuild, they were like, oh, wait, it's an incompetent team actually doing something smart, and then they immediately go piss it away. So, yeah, the Phoenix Suns might be in trouble because we...
Yeah, we've been talking them up. See, now, this is why I'm grumpy, actually. It's one part Ben Simmons and another part this. Just because there are two teams I was so high on entering the offseason, and they just decided to go, wah, 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 and it sucks, man.
Well, let's go into a team that's made me grumpy today, the Los Angeles Lakers, who have, they got LeBron James to sign a two-year, $85 million extension yesterday, and then news broke this morning that Anthony Davis is signing a five-year, $190 million max extension. It includes an early termination option prior to the fifth year of the deal. In August, our friend of the podcast, Mason Ginsburg, and my colleague Adam Frommel and I were just joking on Twitter about, you know, Adam runs the website NBA Math, and he tweeted a picture of, like, you know, where all of the Lakers players rank in terms of points added. And it was LeBron and AD just all the way to the right, which was good. And then everyone else was just in a cluster, like the near zero cluster. Yeah. So Mace and I were just joking, like, oh, well, this is why these guys aren't going to stay beyond this offseason. And then naturally, Lakers fans are taking a victory lap on a very obvious joke today. So congratulations, guys. Way to cement yourselves as still the most sensitive fan base in the NBA, which, like, just act like you've been there before. It's remarkable.
Oh, and they have. That's the crazy thing. They really have. They have been there before. No, I actually saw that. I get why you're grumpy a little bit about that, because I read that back in August, I think it was, when you actually posted or something. No, was it even further back? But I remember it being a joke. Very, very clearly.
Clearly.
Yeah. And that's not to alienate the Lakers fans that we have who follows this pod. It's really not. But I do agree that the level of sensitivity from Lakers fans over the past few years have been increasing, and significantly so. And I would love to find out why, because they just won the championship, first and foremost. They've had LeBron for 2 years. They've had AD for a year. I mean, I'm unsure of the, of the insecurity that seems to be flooding around them.
Like, personally, I too would love to fail up, which they did over the last 6 or 7 years. So, you know, I can't fault
not
them
this
for that.
Year. Not this. No. Not this offseason, though.
Right.
This offseason, they did legitimately
pre-getting
good work,
LeBron.
But yeah. Yeah. Right, I agree with you. I think that's fair. They did fail upwards, and people who would argue otherwise, like, that's just being a homer. They did, but you know what? Good for them.
Yeah,
That's not criticism. If you fail upwards and you make and you win a championship out of it, like, good on you. Honestly, that's good work.
That was literally the Sixers' strategy for the past 7 years. It's just that wasn't the Lakers' strategy. They just kind of fell into it. But hey, it worked all the same. So kudos. But let's get to these extensions more. I mean, AD, we knew he was going to re-sign. We just didn't know the length. Were you surprised he took the full 5 year?
Wildly surprised. Yeah. I for sure thought it was going to be a 2+1. Because then he could opt out and go into his, you know, after he completed his 10th year, he would be eligible for 35% of the cap. I thought that was going to be the play. I even wrote an article about it for Danish TV too. I was like, I was so sure that was going to happen. So we're, you know, every salary cap expert, basically, like John Hollinger of The Athletic and formerly of the Memphis Grizzlies, reacted to that like, holy crap, like, I thought he'd signed the 2+1 as well. Like, this was really off. He estimated that Davis would have lost, I think, $8 million in total. So that's not the end of the world, right, especially for him. And you also raised a good point, I think, on Twitter when you said, you know, it's $190 million. Right. So maybe the need for earning 35% of the cap just isn't that great.
Right. No, because I wrote the same, like, for Forbes, you know, why he should take a 2+1 to maximize his earnings. And then, you know, when you hear he signed a 5-year, $190 million deal, you're like, okay, you know what? After you make $190 million, maybe right, you just don't care. Like, what are you going to do with $190 million? Like, is it, the difference is really going to be that great? And it's, again, that's only his, what he's earning from the Lakers. Now he is part of a championship team with LeBron James for the next few years. You don't think he's going to be in, like, every advertisement ever. He's going to make a ton of endorsement money. You know, LeBron is slipping him the clutch cash under the table for being in Space Jam 2 and then Space Jam 3. So he'll make that money up somewhere, I'm sure. But no, like you, I was very surprised he took the 5-year deal. What'd you think about LeBron's deal? Because that one just kind of came out of nowhere.
It really did. I mean, obviously a good signing for the Lakers. Let me just wrap up your you know, money under the table bit.
Sorry, Jeff Siegel.
At what point do we actually have to, you know, do we have to start talking about that?
Not if we want to stay friends with Jeff or anyone at Clutch.
Well, no, I understand that, but I'm not saying under the table necessarily. But I mean, let's be honest here. It is an agency that is in some capacity run by LeBron James, an active player. I think at some point down the line, it's going to have to be a conversation whether we want it to or not. It is rubbing some people the wrong way, even inside the industry. I have a feeling this is going to be a subject that's going to be brought up either by us or by someone else, but I'm going to be straight with you. I feel a little bit uneasy about, you know, the way that this is functioning. Like, I definitely think that Clutch is LeBron. And I understand, oh, they tried to make the separation, Rich Paul and all that. And I love Jeff. I'm sorry, Jeff. But look, let's just be honest. It's a little bit wobbly in terms of legality, I think.
I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, so I don't want to say definitively either way. I think it is safe to say they are pushing the envelope, at least, in terms of what the typical arrangement is. And if it's working for them and, like, they're getting their clients paid, good for them. But, yeah, it does, you know, it does beg the question. And, God, I forget who wrote about this. But, you know, there was talk about, like, clearly the Lakers are just run by Clutch now at this point. Like, half of their roster are Clutch players. But then they were trying to make ends with whoever Giannis's agency is. I don't remember the name of him offhand. But, yeah, basically it's like there's a lot more of this, the agency stuff that's happening behind the scenes than any of us would like to admit publicly. So it's definitely just something to keep in the back of your mind, especially when analyzing any of these Lakers contracts in particular. Like, did the Lakers overpay KCP? Probably. Who's his agent? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I will say this, though. I actually don't have a problem with it if it was, like in football, my football. Because there, the system is just more open. Like, you can have conversation with players and agents, negotiate crisscross of each other in a different way. There aren't the same limitations as in basketball. And I think if agents nowadays had those restrictions lifted, I would be good with it. What I have a problem with is those rules exist right now, so you have to abide by them at this point. Like, if you want to change the system, fine by me. And if the system is changed, fine by me. But until it is, I think maybe don't make it this obvious, or not even make it this obvious. Like, maybe just stick to the rules and see. And I'm not even saying they're breaking the rules, but like you said, they're pushing the envelope. Maybe just don't do that to the same extent, because, good Lord, it does add this very nasty image, I think, that's left behind.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's...
Sorry, Jeff.
He's fine. He's getting the Rich Paul money too. He's good.
This is true.
But yeah, so let's LeBron 2-year $85 million extension. So he is now signed through the 2022-23 season, which means, I mean, that's their core move for the next 3 years. AD and LeBron are both locked in.
And when is Bronny draft eligible?
I believe it is 2023.
Oh, what do you know?
What a coincidence.
Is that something I've been saying for the past year?
Yeah. Or his oldest son is slated to graduate high school in 2023. So we'll see what happens with this like double draft idea, you know, the removing the age restriction. But yeah, I mean, it's going to take him. He's going to be 38 when the contract ends. So, I mean, you know, this takes him. He's not, it's not fair to say he is still in his prime. He's turning 36 in a few weeks, but like, this takes him into the twilight of his career, even though he's showing no signs of slowing down. So maybe,
right?
Who knows? You know, maybe he's going to be like Tom Brady and play till he's 43. But
and then join Tampa or the equivalent, and then completely fall off a cliff.
Right, the Tampa Bay Raptors, as is going to happen this season. Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say you give the best player in the NBA, who just led you to a championship, however much money you can possibly give him. This was a
Giannis didn't lead the Bucks to a championship. What the hell are you talking about?
Then is he the best player in the NBA?
I think he is still, because look, let's not forget the Anthony Davis factor here.
I know. We did this. Adam is at the NBA math site, has their crystal basketball where you have to rank every player in the NBA in this 12-point sliding scale, and you give 1-12 grade, which is best player in the NBA. I gave it to Giannis last year. I gave it to Giannis for this upcoming season too, because I feel like he's going to have an especially big chip on his shoulder, and we are getting coasting LeBron for the first couple months of this season anyway.
Right.
But speaking, go ahead,
Mark. This was a tongue-in-cheek comment, though. He's obviously up there. I'm not going to sit here and argue that LeBron James is not the best player in the league. It's, you know, he might very well be, because when push comes to shove, he plays smarter. Is he as amazing as he was back when he was in his physical prime? No, but it would be unfair to expect that of him.
Yeah. And so, since we just brought up Giannis, I think we should go into what this means for 2021 now, because this is now the second team, Miami being the first, that had at least been mentioned as a possible Giannis landing spot that has now, you know, it's the NBA, never say never, but they've made it exponentially more difficult on themselves to create enough cap space to land Giannis. Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report posted something yesterday about this, and then updated it today with the AD news. But yeah, I mean, long story short, they're not going to be able to create max cap space, even if they get rid of every other single player on their roster, which is much easier said than done. So, you know, what do you think of the Lakers committing to like this two-star model moving forward? And then do you think it means that, you know, both Miami and LA is getting some intel that Giannis is probably going to sign the Supermax in the next few weeks?
No, the whole intel thing, I don't think so, because someone would have leaked it. I just think so. The NBA is such a leaky league, so it's, I don't think that would have happened. I think the Lakers just won the championship and decided, hey, this works. What do you know? This actually works. We just won the championship, and we just had one of the best off seasons maybe ever outside of like a superstar acquisition, just in terms of role player acquisitions. We're fine. we are in a very good spot. We should be able to win the championship this season and potentially next season again. We're good, and that's the entire goal. The goal isn't to accumulate players, it's to win championships. So, if Giannis isn't necessary to win the championship, which he wasn't this year, very likely won't be this year or this upcoming season as well, then like, why would they need him?
That is fair. And reading through this Pincus piece, I'm realizing he is the one who brought up the connection to Giannis's agency, Octagon. So, yeah, I mean, it seems clear that they are punting on that dream, but as you said, Mort, like, there's no reason to think that they're going to be substantially worse next year. I mean, on paper, they got better while the rest of their top competitors in the West, as we've said, either kind of flatlined or went down a bit in the case of Denver in particular. I mean, like, looking ahead down the road, I am curious to see what the post-LeBron Lakers look like, because, you know, AD is committed for at least one more year guaranteed beyond LeBron. That isn't to say LeBron won't re-sign after the 2022-23 season. If this year has taught us anything, it's that we, as humans, cannot plan anything that far ahead.
That's correct.
But with that said, the cupboard is going to get pretty barren for the Lakers, especially given their cap restraints. Like, they can continue cycling through the Marc Gasols of the world, the Markieff Morrises of the world, the ring-chasing veterans who are willing to take minimum deals. But with these two guys on their books, it's going to be hard to bring in substantial talent. They'll have their non-taxpayer mid-level exception, most likely, in most years. It's just going to get progressively harder to round out that supporting cast. So I am curious long-term what this looks like. But look, if they win another title or two in the next 3 years, who cares? That is a problem for another day. And exactly. I think that's probably the perspective that they're approaching it from. You can't, when you have LeBron James on your team, you can't also be planning 5 years ahead. It just, you know, he is good enough to win a title right now, as he proved 2 months ago.
Yep, I would agree.
All right, Mort. Well, I think that is a good place to wrap up. So thank you all for listening. We will be back later this weekend. We are going to keep our season previews going, but this Russ trade and these Lakers moves necessitated their own episode. So please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. Give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And for those who have an iOS device, download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out with us live, ask us questions, even share the stage with us. It's a ton of fun, and we'll be recording a lot over these next couple weeks. So please download the Locker Room app on an iOS device. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, have a good one, and I will talk to you soon, my friend.
Definitely, Brian, you too. And I look forward to coming up with, which is coming up soon, our awards pod.
Yeah, your favorite. Yeah.
It's my favorite. No, I am for once looking forward to it.
Whoa. Yeah. That's genuinely surprising.
I feel pretty good about my MIP selection, and I usually am pretty consistent in that one. And I think my MIP selection this year is this time the guy might not just be a candidate. I think he might be a winner.
Interesting. All right. Well, keep an ear out for that. That'll come out a little closer to the start of the season. Full disclosure, I've given no thoughts to any of my picks so far, but we'll get there.
And that's why you're an NBA analyst.
We got 3 weeks till the season starts, man. Let me live.
Yeah, well, that's perfect, because I was about to say don't die. So that's
good. All right, later, man.
Later.